Get ready. Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the Weekly Cooldown. I am Kami Jace, your host for another episode. If you're joining us for the first time, this is the show where we get to know the gaming news of the week and we get to know our guest. It is episode 164 of the Weekly Cooldown and it is August 25th. We've got a lot of news, actually, kind of condensed because of how much there is. There's a car in the background. Hate it here. But yeah, we're gonna condense some of these headlines and then we're gonna get into the rest of it. Very good conversation. So here we go. At the time of this recording, Gamescom is still going on. For those who don't know, Gamescom is a convention held for video games that takes place in Germany. This year we got a look at tons of new games nearly on the horizon, including some favorites like Return to Monkey Island, Tales from the Borderland, and more. We also got a first look at new titles like Atlas Fallen, Everywhere, Friends vs. Friends, and an upcoming Dune game called Dune Awakening. Additionally, we also got another look at games like the Callisto Protocol and Lies of P. We also got a look at a Pokemon-themed mini Ace Man, which, if those words were confusing to you, is a car. The mini boasts a playful interior taken over by Pokemon, and other features, including being an all-electric car. The collaboration seems to be only a concept for the car that may be hitting the market from Mini in the near future. The price for a PS5 has hiked up around the world everywhere except the United States. The UK saw an increase of about £30, Australia about $50 Australian, and Canada about $30 Canadian. Sony cited challenging economic conditions as the reason for the upcharge. While there does seem to be a global inflation crisis, not seem to be, there is, and supply chain issues, Microsoft has a different valuation. Microsoft confirmed that there are currently no plans to increase the price of the Xbox Series S or X, stating that the suggested retail price is here to stay. In some Bungie news, we got a look at Destiny 2's latest expansion known as Lightfall. The showcase this week showed off a new darkness-based subclass known as Strand, which is described as being a form of psychic energy. In addition to the new power, Destiny 2 is also getting in-game looking for group systems and a new loadout system. Perhaps as exciting is the new location. Players will be traveling to Neptune, which in the trailer seemed to be very cyberpunk-styled city. There is much more coming with the next expansion, which is set to release on February 28th, 2023. And finally, Twitch is now allowing Twitch partners to stream on YouTube and Facebook. In an email sent to partner streamers this week, Twitch told the streamers that they would be allowed to live stream on other platforms. Twitch recognized the importance of allowing streamers the flexibility of streaming on other platforms to reach other audiences. Twitch did, however, say that they would not allow Twitch streamers to simulcast on YouTube and Facebook. In fact, these partners can only stream on YouTube and Facebook if they are not currently streaming on Twitch. Twitch does, however, allow simulcasting on mobile devices or mobile services like TikTok and Instagram Live. And those are just some of the headlines this week. Oh, boy. Those are just some of the headlines, and I really mean that. There was so much news, and I had to, like, pick out the good ones, or at least the most interesting ones. Anyways, if you've got something you want to talk about, of course, you can hit me up on Twitter at KamiJaceGaming or at WKCooldown. Or, of course, if you are live in our audience, say hello. We're doing that again. We're going to be doing it every week, homies. So be sure to join in, say hello in the chat, and yeah. Let's chat live. So that being said, we do have some folks in the audience, but of course we have someone slightly more important. Sorry, audience. Sorry, it's our guest. Our guest, I would like to actually introduce themselves.
Hey, everybody. My name is Ken Gagne. I am the co-host of the Transporter Lock podcast about Star Trek. I'm the former host of the Polygamer podcast, which I just ended an 8-year run on. And I am super excited to be here on the Weekly Cooldown. Hey, everybody.
Yes. Hello. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I was so excited to get your email because we attempted and failed to collaborate on a PAX East 2022 panel. And I'm glad that we found a different outlet for this collaboration.
That we did. Yes. I was so excited to go to Boston. But it's okay. It's okay. Next time. Next time again.
You know what happens is whether or not you've ever been on or run a panel at PAX East before, they don't tell you when they are accepting submissions for the next year. You just need to keep monitoring the website and notice that, oh, panel submissions are open now. And I, you know, as I think a lot of people are during the pandemic, I was a little distracted and I didn't check until it was like, oh, a week to go. I could have had a month to get this panel together. Now I have a week. So you would have been one of the first people I reached out to regardless. But given more time, I would have reached out to additional people, maybe had a more fleshed out panel. So that's on me for not being more attentive.
Well, this year, or I guess next year, I'll be on it too. I'm just going to be like, all right, PAX, put out the information. Is it now?
Just refresh, refresh.
We'll figure it out next year and I will be there and I will see PAX's face in my face. That all said, tell us about your shows again. You said you hosted, first of all, you said you just ended one show after 8 years.
That's right. So I've launched 6 different podcasts in my life over the last 11 years. I started with a monthly co-hosted show all about the Apple II computer. Are you old enough to remember the Apple II?
I think so.
This came out in 1977. It's different from the Mac. Apple as a company was founded in 77, but the Mac didn't come out until 84. So they were making other non-Macintosh computers. One of them was the Apple II, very popular in education. A lot of people played Oregon Trail on the Apple II.
Ah.
And there are still some, as we call them, retro computing enthusiasts out there who still like to use the Apple II. Goodness. So I am one of those people. I attend an annual convention in Kansas City. I am the editor of the last remaining magazine about this computer. It used to be a huge market back in the 80s. Now it's down to just one, mine. And that was my very first podcast. A friend and I had a monthly show where we talked about all the latest Apple II news. We interviewed guests. From there, I went off to a bunch of other podcasts. I did one about multiple sclerosis, which is a neurological disorder. I did one about independent game developers where I was interviewing them. I was on the faculty of a college in Boston, and I taught my students how to host a podcast. Every now and then, I would contribute an episode as well. As I mentioned, I'm doing Transporter Lock, which is a Star Trek podcast with my friend Sabriel Mastin. And we air that on no regular schedule. It's just whenever there's new Star Trek on the air, which nowadays there's a lot. But the show that I just ended was called Polygamer, and that was a show I launched 8 years ago after one of my first PAX East panels, which was about feminism and gaming. And I realized that PAX, this was really when dick wolves were at the front of people's minds. This was a really bad joke, quote-unquote joke, that the creators of Penny Arcade made, and it turned off a lot of people, and it made PAX sort of a toxic environment. And I realized that there was a lot to be said about the topic of feminism in gaming, and it had to include more voices than were at PAX, and it needed to be heard by people who were not willing to go to PAX. So I launched a podcast to discuss all aspects of diversity in gaming. So it was an interview-based show every month, originally every 2 weeks, and then eventually every month, a different guest talking about their accomplishments, their experiences, their passions, whether they were speedrunners, software developers, community organizers, cosplayers, whatever, focusing on LGBTQIA, women, people of color, and the differently abled. And after 8 years, I felt like the culture and the environment, the atmosphere had changed for the better. I launched this podcast 1 month before Gamergate happened. And Gamergate really underscored the need for a podcast like this. And there were a lot of podcasts on these topics back then, like Less Than or Equal was one of them, Isometric, Unconsolable was another one, Justice Points. And all those other hosts eventually moved on to other projects, and I kept plugging away. You know, a lot of them, just like you, made a lot more episodes than my show did because they were airing more frequently, and I was going a little bit more slowly. But after 8 years, I felt like, you know what? A lot of these voices now have different outlets that may not have existed 8 years ago, and they don't necessarily need to be channeled through a straight white cis man anymore.
That's perfect. Beautiful. Yeah.
I mean, I was certainly happy to signal boost them, and I'm happy to continue doing that. But I felt like the stories that had been told in this body of work I'd built over 8 years was fairly comprehensive.
That'll do it. Beautifully said. And again, I say this jokingly, but I also mean it. We thank you for your service. it is very, I guess, maybe poignant isn't the right word, but it feels nice that we have, you know, your allyship, like your true allyship, right? Especially for 8 years, that is a lot of lifting. But it feels good. And I can certainly say I think a lot of people appreciate it. And I'm sure a lot of people who have listened to your podcast over the years definitely appreciate what you've done. So that feels good. And I appreciate you.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate hearing that. As you probably know, podcasting is often like shouting into the void, and you don't know who's going to listen to your episode and when and how it's going to land. I occasionally got some feedback. For example, one of my very first episodes in the first year was about the nonprofit Take This, founded by Susan Arndt and Russ Pitts. They host the AFK rooms, if you've ever been to PAX or some other convention, just a quiet place for people to go, and even if they need to, get therapeutic help during a very busy event that a conference can be. And I got feedback on that episode. It was like 2 months after I aired it, and somebody emailed me and said that she had been having a really hard time, and she was sitting in the doctor's office, and she was trying to decide, should I even bother waiting to see the doctor, or should I just bail? And her podcast player pulled up that episode. That's what came up next in her shuffle. And she started listening to other people who have these issues and other people who have gotten help and how much help it can be. And she's like, oh, you know, that's what I want for me. And she ended up sticking around and going to see the doctor.
Wow.
Yeah.
See, you're really helping people out there.
You never know how many, and not all of them write back. One misconception a lot of people had about my podcast, due to the way it's spelled, especially when it's, you see it written out, Polygamer also looks like Polygamer.
Oh, sure.
And so, like, I actually had some guests decline my invitation because they thought they needed to be polyamorous to be on the show.
Yes, that is unfortunate, but also kind of funny.
A little bit of both. So for my very last episode, I'm like, you know what? I don't need to worry about that after this episode. So my very last episode was about polyamory in video games.
Wow.
And after I did that episode, I used to be a high school teacher, and one of my students from 16 years ago emailed me and said, hey, I just listened to your episode, and I'm polyamorous, and I rarely, if ever, see that represented in media, in games, in podcasts, and hearing that on your show really made me feel seen.
Wow. That's so, I don't know, to have that kind of callback, or I guess not a callback, but to have that kind of connection, right, to someone that you basically worked with, right? So many years ago, that's brilliant.
Yeah, this is somebody who I knew them when they were 16, and now they're in their early 30s. You know, they've practically doubled their age since I last saw them. And who knows what life experiences they've had in the meantime.
Brilliant. Very good. Very good. We really love that. Now, What have you been playing this week?
What have I been playing?
I hope.
I wish I had more time to play games. Well, you know what? Separates me from absolutely nobody, because everybody wishes that.
That's correct. You're like the 20th person in so many episodes to say the same thing.
So two of the challenges I have on my time, one is I do publish that magazine that I mentioned called Juiced.gs. It's only 4 issues a year, but the next issue comes out in less than a month. So I'm busily reading submissions and editing them and getting them laid out. The other challenge for my time is that I am a digital nomad. Are you familiar with that term?
Sort of. Please explain for the listener and also maybe me.
Sure. So a digital nomad is somebody whose job is entirely on the internet and thus is divorced from physical location. So I have a fully remote job. The entire company is fully remote, has been ever since it was founded 18 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And so after working this job for a year and a half in a suburb of Boston, which is where I'm from, I realized I didn't necessarily need to pay Boston rent anymore because I wasn't going into an office in Boston. So I didn't renew my lease. I put everything I own into storage. I loaded up my Prius, and I've just been driving around the country for the last 3 years with no permanent location.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
It's a lot of fun. It's not exactly what I envisioned because I set out on this journey 5 months before the pandemic. And so that has limited my destinations, but it's been a blast being able to see parts of the country and seeing old friends and new experiences. Right now I'm in Kansas City. 2 days from now, I'm going to Santa Fe and I'll be there for 6 weeks. Then I'm going to jaunt up to Denver for a while. Not exactly sure what October looks like right now, but in November I'm headed over to Los Angeles to do some dog sitting.
That's fantastic.
And then it's down to San Diego to do some house sitting, back up to Los Angeles for some cat sitting. And that brings me up through January. So, since not every place I live has a TV, I don't have a PlayStation or an Xbox anymore. I used to. They're currently sitting in storage. I do have a Switch, and I just last week got my first new personal computer in 9 years.
Wow.
So I actually have a Steam-worthy Macintosh now, if that's not an oxymoron.
It isn't now. In a couple years ago, maybe, but it's gone. Yes.
Oh, yeah. It's much better from when I was in college last millennium. But yeah, I have a Trello board where I keep track of all the games I have bought, and I have columns like games I have bought but not played yet, games I've started playing, games I finished, games that are always going to be fun, and games that I've given up on. So in the last month, I have bought Endling, The Last Extinction. No, I'm sorry. Endling Extinction is Forever is the name. Evergate, Inmost, Death's Door, Unsighted, Carto, Boyfriend Dungeon, and Kathy Rain. And I have not played any of them.
That's fair. I mean, again, it's hard to sit down and play video games these days. But you will enjoy those. Those are very good titles, and especially Boyfriend Dungeon. We love that.
I was going to ask you which one I should start with. Anytime it goes on sale, there's a Reddit thread that I follow in the subreddit Nintendo Switch Deals. And people are always lukewarm about this game, but I've seen it at PAX. I've seen some of the staff on panels. I've had some of the staff on panels. And it just looks and sounds like so much fun.
It is one of those games. It's very hit and miss, I think, with, I guess, what we would call maybe like hardcore gamers, you know? But for people who really like the kind of visual novel and adventure game that this kind of seems to be, that kind of mashes those two genres together, the dating sim and the adventure, in a way that feels very, for lack of a better word, maybe deliberate.
Sure.
It is just one of those finely tuned games. Like, it seems like every choice that was made in this game was made with like only the staff in mind, but then they were like, let's give it to everybody. Everyone will love this.
No, I think that sounds great. You have to be your own audience. If you don't like your own game, nobody else will.
Exactly. Yes.
And speaking of visual novel, I am sort of in the middle of Arcade Spirits 2.
Oh, I do not know this one.
So Arcade Spirits came out a couple years ago. It's set in an alternative history present day where the video game crash of 1983 never happened.
Oh.
And so arcades are still a huge thing. And just like how in our timeline, we have esports, in that timeline, they have these huge arcade tournaments. And so you play as an arcade employee and you get to, it's a visual novel. So you get to talk to and get to know your coworkers, the regulars at the arcade. You get to choose one to romance if you want. And then the sequel came out just a few months ago. I had the narrative designer as one of the last guests on the Polygamer podcast. And this game, same alternate timeline, same era, even a few similar characters, but now you're playing an arcade regular as opposed to an arcade owner.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Arcade Spirits and Arcade Spirits too.
Yeah, this is the game that taught me that I like visual novels.
It's very interesting that I think we're seeing kind of a resurgence in the indie genre, especially of visual novel games. And I think that is so good because generally when folks were introduced to visual novels, it was through the Japanese styled ones, which are fine. And, you know, but I think having the spin on it that is like, you know, you're a video gamer or you're the person you're trying to romance is also a sword or something like that. And then also having, you know, a very unique kind of art style really makes visual novels a little bit more personal, rather than having the kind of similar anime style ones that were coming out for so many years. I feel like we're getting to a point where visual novels are unique in every way now.
Yeah, I used to have a YouTube channel where I'd do unboxings and Let's Plays. Mm-hmm. And mostly it was first-party Nintendo games like Super Mario, 3D World, and Breath of the Wild. I tried branching out, and I tried playing Hatoful Boyfriend.
Oh, of course.
And I couldn't figure out how to let's play it because I felt like instead of offering this witty commentary and running banter, I was just reading text off the screen.
Yes.
And so like I couldn't figure out how to make that into content for my channel. And also it was just a really weird game.
Yes, absolutely. Very strange idea for a visual novel, but... Mm. Is nonetheless a visual novel.
Yeah. What about you? What are you playing these days?
I've been on Final Fantasy XIV. There was a recent update to the game that basically gives the Warrior of Light, the big bad that you are, the hero of the story, their own island to basically play with, a la, you know, Animal Crossing or Harvest Moon. So basically you get like a little slice of life, capturing animals and feeding them and building up this island into like some weird pseudo resort, and doing just cute things like that. And,
that sounds pretty chill.
And you say that, but I've been grinding away at it like it's any other kind of game of its kind, right? Like, I feel like this is the game I've been wanting out of Final Fantasy XIV, despite it being such a story-driven MMORPG, in which I am fighting big monsters and doing crazy spells and stuff like that. I feel like this is what I've been waiting for, is the moment that I can go to an island and catch a sheep, put the sheep in a pen, and, you know, just vibe for a while. But they do market it as like a, you know, this is relaxing content. You do it at the pace that you'd like, blah, 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 blah. And I guess the pace that I'd like is like go, go, go. I want to be to the next rank. I want to build the next building. I like go, 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 fast, 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 hurry, hurry. Which is not what the Harvest Moon Animal Crossing spirit is all about.
No, not quite.
But that's how I do it. But yeah, it's been Final Fantasy. I've also been playing Rumbleverse, which is a lot of fun. If you out there need to know what Rumbleverse is, it is basically wrestling, fighting game, Fortnite. If I had to use the three words you would know the most.
I did not see that third word coming.
Yes, it is. It is exactly how it sounds, and it is actually pretty fantastic. And I'm looking forward to seeing how it grows, and hopefully it does grow, because Battle Royale games, sometimes they get a little stagnant, and they just don't. But fingers crossed for Rumbleverse, because it's pretty cool.
Wow. Yeah, I have never been much of an online gamer, which means I don't think I've ever actually played an MMORPG before.
Oh, you should give it a try.
Like, whether it's Final Fantasy, World of Warcraft, EverQuest, Ultima Online, any of the spacefaring ones. I used to play games like that when they were text-based. I guess you'd call them MUDs, multi-user dungeons. And this was back on the days where you had online services like AOL, CompuServe, Genie, Delphi, Prodigy. Yes. And those services, they were expensive. I was paying... Mm-hmm. Or that's not true. My parents were paying $6 to $10 an hour. And I think that was such a negative experience because eventually they decided that I needed to be responsible for those bills. And I don't think I want to be responsible for online gaming bills anymore.
Yeah, it definitely adds up between having to pay for really high quality internet and then also having to pay for the game, the monthly subscription model. It's rough, but here I am nonetheless after many years.
Well, that's true. That's a big difference from back in the day. You're not paying per hour, you're paying per month.
Yep. Yep.
What
it
I usually
might be
do
a
is
a little bit more affordable, but you know, it's also still like not it's like not sustainable at all.
Yeah, since my coworkers and I are fully remote and we never see each other in person, like maybe every one Sunday night a month, we'll just get together and we'll play Switch games like Luigi's Mansion or Mario Kart.
That's great.
Yeah, and sometimes on a Friday afternoon, we'll just quit work early and we'll play Jackbox or Rift Tracks.
That's wonderful. I really appreciate being able to, even if it's not an MMO, you know, like party games, racing games, stuff like that. I really appreciate being able to play with people, whether they be right next to me or, you know, miles and miles away. And I think that's part of the reason why I like MMORPGs a lot. I tend to find my in-group pretty well, and stick with them and end up becoming really good friends, and then we start playing fighting games together or Mario Kart. We'll have Jackbox nights or something like that, etc.
Yeah, playing online games with friends is much more appealing to me than strangers. I know strangers are just friends you haven't met yet, but I have so many friends that I rarely get to see or interact with that for me that's what online gaming is.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what it should be to you, listener. We are going to take a quick break, and then we're going to get into these news stories. So stick around for more show. See you in a bit.
Hey, sorry to interrupt your favorite podcast, but I'm here to tell you about Shrimp and Crits, an actual play podcast with a southern twist. My name is Ian, and I am the keeper for this show as we play Monster of the Week by Michael Sands. If you like the sound of swampy monster mayhem, gators gone shopping, and magical fairy mischief, you will be right at home in the remote panhandle town of Gullicochica, Florida, where spooky danger has begun to wash ashore. Shrimp and Crits is the story of Sarah Payne the Mundane.
All I'm asking for is answers. That's all I'm looking for, is the truth.
Ari Green the Searcher.
You know the proclamations of the Fae. I suggest you follow them from now on.
And Ray Ray, the most mundane monstrous you will ever meet.
Mr. Zeus, I'm a big fan. I knew you were real. And Ray Ray's just like bowing in front of this swan.
As they fumble their way through protecting their skeptical town from mysterious evils. We release new episodes every other Monday on the podcatcher of your choice. Hope to see you soon in sunny Gullicochica.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to the show. So, it's time to get into these news stories, starting with Amazon / Dead Island 2. It's a weird one, so get ready. Amazon is launching a new piece of technology for your Amazon Echo device or Alexa. I only half apologize if it just activated. The tech is called the Alexa Game Control, and it is designed to use voice commands to accomplish actions in video games. It was revealed during Gamescom that Dead Island 2 will debut this technology. According to the showcase, you'll be able to tell your Echo device to switch weapons or interact with NPCs or even locate a nearby workbench, things of that nature. Players will not need to have a Amazon Prime account to use this, but you will need at least an Amazon account. The technology will be available when Dead Island 2 launches on February 3rd, 2023. Personally, I don't want Amazon near my video games that much. According to the showcase as well, you will not actually need to prime your Echo device by saying its name. I don't want to say it again for fear of activating people's devices. You'll just have to say, like, where's the nearest workbench? And they will tell you where it is. Or switch weapons, and then it will switch weapons for you. So it feels to me, and it's because I think it is extremely invasive.
I don't have an Amazon Echo or a Google Home or any of those other devices, probably because I don't have a home. So I do like knowing when I walk into a house that has those things. I remember I house sat and dog sat for a friend for a week and didn't realize the whole time I was there that she had an Alexa. And I know it's not like somebody is going to go back and specifically listen to what I was saying while talking to her dog. But I'm just not a huge fan of those things. Yeah. However, you know, this is a pretty cool application for this technology. And when I first heard of it, I was like, oh, that's going to be revolutionary. Why haven't games done this? And then I'm like, oh, wait, no, games have been doing this.
Yeah.
Yeah, I backed a Kickstarter 9 years ago for a game called There Came an Echo, which eventually came out for Steam and PS4. It has the voice acting of Laura Bailey, Will Wheaton, Ashley Birch. Mm-hmm. And I played it on the Mac. It's sort of a top-down tactical game, a little bit like XCOM, I guess. And you tell your players, like, go left, fire weapon, you know, shoot guard 3. And you're supposed to be like the commander of a unit, and they're listening to your commands. And then there was another game for PlayStation 2, which I never played, called Lifeline. Mm-hmm. Where it's a young woman on a space station and she's trying to survive, and you're telling her what to do as opposed to just actually picking up the controller and controlling her. Mm-hmm. And I think both of these games, especially Lifeline, was just gimmicky.
Yeah.
Kind of like how 3D televisions were for a little while there.
Sure.
You know, like people tried it. They were like, oh, this is a nice idea. And then it never really went anywhere. And I haven't really seen a lot of applications like this. Lifeline. Oh, gosh. Lifeline came out in 2003. So that is...
Wow. Yeah.
That's almost 20 years ago.
Yeah. Well, thinking on it, actually, you bring up that it's been done before, and it has, I guess, in a way that, as you said, with these games, I actually recall SOCOM 2 having an ability to control your teammates through voice commands when you had a headset.
That's right.
I guess the difference is, and maybe we'll have more information. I mean, obviously we'll have more information when it finally drops, but it seems like having the Echo control is a little bit more flexible in its speech. I remember SOCOM being very rigid. You'd have to say a very specific word and then another specific word and then a third specific word to get everyone moving. I feel like this is saying, like, you can use more common speech to control your character this time around. And I guess that feels a little bit different. Maybe we've gotten to the point where we are now having, like, full-on conversations with our technology.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. This is a very different era of voice recognition. You can have more natural conversations with your devices. You're not just reading items off a menu and then saying the words you're seeing on the screen. Right. So, I gotta say though, I actually forgot about this going into this podcast until just now. One of my favorite voice activated games ever. Have you ever played Seaman on the Sega Dreamcast?
No.
So this came out around
the Sega Dreamcast.
Yeah, the Dreamcast came out in 99, and this game came out like 2000, 2001. It was narrated by Leonard Nimoy.
Oh my goodness.
And you had this virtual pet. It was a fish with a human face. And you were raising it from a tadpole all the way up into a frog with legs. And you would talk to it. The Dreamcast game came with a microphone that you plug into your controller. And you could talk to your fish. And it would ask you questions. And this was, I remember, like, this was around the turn of the millennium.
Yeah.
A long time before the iPhone. And this kind of technology just blew my mind. At one point, the fish asked me where I live, and I said Boston, and it said, wow, it must be nice to live near so many fine colleges and universities.
Oh my God.
And then it asked me what I do for a living. I said I'm a writer, and he said, oh, well, be sure to write a nice story about me.
That's actually quite unnerving. Like, it is, it sounds incredibly cool, but it also sounds like frightening in a way. Like, to be able to literally converse with your sea creature, your virtual sea creature with a man's face.
Yeah.
Frightening. But also, I guess that's part of the charm of the game, maybe?
Yeah, especially 22 years ago.
Yes. Absolutely. I think my mom would have called that a devil game and made me throw it out the window.
Oh, no.
I'm just taking a guess. I actually looked it up really quick, and apparently back in 2017, the creator of Seaman hinted at a spiritual sequel of the game. I don't know that it is still in production at this point. We haven't heard any news. But it seems to maybe be happening. Who knows?
It says a sequel came out in Japan for the PlayStation 2 in 2007.
Ooh.
Which I didn't know until just now. But it says it only sold 61,000 copies total.
Mm. But so, there could be another one.
Well, you know what? Let me pop onto eBay and see if anybody is selling their copy of Seaman 2. Oh, they are.
Japanese version.
Yeah, it's only $15.
What?
I mean, I see more expensive copies, but I see a couple copies for under $20, and then I see several copies for over $50.
That is absolutely fascinating, and I will follow up with you if you decide to make a bid. That sounds amazing. The Seaman creator also did tweet a car, a yellow car that has a sign on it that says "Don't Panic, Seaman" on it. So, it's very interesting. Very interesting stuff. Well, there you have it. This technology was already out before Jeff Bezos decided he wanted to try and be cool. But hey, if you're really into it, you can start using Alexa Game Control February 3rd, 2023 with Dead Island 2, which is still happening. Can't believe it. Can believe it, but can't believe it. Interesting the way this news drops in our laps. So, for our second and final story, it's kind of multiple stories, and we're going to kind of expand it to talk about movie and video game adaptations. So, without further ado, there are apparently a ton of video game adaptations being worked on right now. This week, we've learned that The Last of Us has wrapped up a good portion of its production and is nearly on its way. Though we have not heard much news recently, we know that the Borderlands movie is still on its way as well. That said, we've learned now about other media adaptations with regard to the Gran Turismo, Ghost of Tsushima, Jack and Daxter, God of War, Minecraft, Five Nights at Freddy's, and Metal Gear Solid franchises on the way. Meanwhile, Sega has also announced recently that adaptations of the 1995 video game for the Sega Dreamcast, Comic Zone, and the Sega Genesis, and the Dreamcast Space Channel 5, which was released in 2000, are also getting adaptations. So, lots of video game adaptations on the way. Lots of strange ones, right? Comic Zone and Space Channel 5. We also got news just today, as of this recording, that the Umbrella Academy director, Steve Blackman, will be directing the Netflix Horizon Zero Dawn adaptation, and the BioShock film will be directed by the Hunger Games director, Francis Lawrence. So, adaptations. There's a lot to talk about here, and I think the reason I wanted to bring it up is because of how saturated that kind of market is right now. Right now, we have the Rings of Power, which is the Lord of the Rings Amazon series coming out. That is also an adaptation, obviously, of a book instead of a video game. But there are tons and tons and tons of opinions about it because of how loyal the Lord of the Rings fan base is and how kind of, I guess, unclear Tolkien's writings are, right? So there's a black dwarf in it. There's a Puerto Rican elf in it, right? There are people of color playing roles, and that's obviously upsetting a certain clientele of people. But other people are really excited. Nowhere in any of Tolkien's work does it say there is or isn't any kind of people of color. So I guess it's up to interpretation, or in this case, it's up to the adaptation, you know, how they want to represent certain characters. But I guess my first question to you is a fun one. A fun question first. What video game adaptation would you be really interested to see?
Spy Hunter.
Ooh, okay. I have something for you.
Okay.
Think we have one. I don't know. I'm just gonna check really quick because I feel like we do. Spy Hunter, nowhere. Okay, so it's not a okay, this is this is really funny. It's not a movie, but there was a Spy Hunter video game where you played as Agent Alex Decker, who was portrayed by Dwayne The Rock Johnson. So, not quite a movie, but it's like almost reversed, right? You got a movie star to portray a character in your video game instead. Spy Hunter would be a good one, though. Now that we know that there was no Spy Hunter movie, Spy Hunter would be a good one.
Huh. I don't think I knew about this game. have played other Spy Hunter games on the PlayStation 2, but Spy Hunter Nowhere to Run, starring Dwayne Johnson, that's new to me. Huh.
Yeah. Definitely also thought it was a movie, but it is not. It is a video. That would be a good one. I, on that vein, would love to see like a Sly Cooper movie. I feel like Pixar and Disney are doing really good, like anthropomorphic kind of animal characters. And I feel like a Sly Cooper movie would be really, really good in that vein.
Yeah, I can see that. Let me ask you a question. What is your favorite video game to movie adaptation that's already been done?
I really don't have one. I get fairly disappointed, I'll say, with video game adaptations. Not necessarily because I'm looking for a one-to-one vision of the story, but because I'm not always thrilled about where people take it. I don't know. I always think that it could be just like slightly better. That being said, I will watch any day of the week the Super Mario Brothers movie.
I don't care. The original?
Yes, I don't care how bad everyone else says that it is. I will watch that from start to finish, anytime, anywhere.
Wow. Wow.
I have such a soft spot for it.
Because you watched it as a kid, or?
Yeah, it's one of those kind of nostalgic, kind of like, you know, I'm just going to sit back and have a beer and watch this, like, silly movie. Because I guess, you know, what do you expect from a Super Mario movie except for, you know, all of the characters to be there? I don't know that I could expect anything more than the performance already given to us. So I'm just like, that's fine by me. I love it. I love it here. It's everything I need. Yeah, I think that's my answer.
There are two movies that would fit the standard that you set, which is that if it was on, you would just sit back and watch the whole thing. For me, the 1995 Mortal Kombat movie.
Mm-hmm.
And this isn't technically a video game adaptation, but The Wizard, starring Fred Savage.
Oh, sure. Sure. Why not?
I know it's just a huge commercial for Super Mario Bros. 3, and that's all that I wanted when I was that age.
Yeah. I think the Silent Hill movie was actually pretty good, too, now that I'm thinking about it.
Gonna have to agree to disagree on that one.
Ooh.
Now, I'm a huge Silent Hill fan. I love...
As am I, yes.
The PlayStation 1 and PlayStation 2 games were just amazing. There are a few games in the series I've never played, but the ones I've played were amazing. Mm-hmm. And then I went and saw the movie, and I'm like, what is this?
I thought we're going to take this story and make it as good as possible. I thought they did pretty good. The sequels, which I have not seen... just read like the brief synopsis of. I've just been like, never mind. You don't need that anymore.
How many sequels were there?
They came out with the whole series, so they had a 2 and a 3, and the 3 was supposed to be reflective of the actual game with Heather, right? Heather.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And it, I don't know. It just didn't look as. It didn't look as like they tried as hard. Like, you know, for all of its faults, it seemed like they tried to take the Silent Hill adaptation pretty seriously. But it seemed like after that, they were like, well, let's just make like a movie and call it Silent Hill, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm reading on Wikipedia now.
Like Silent Hill.
So wait, how many Silent Hill movies did you say there were?
There should be 3, I think.
If we are, I mean, I don't know. I haven't seen them except the first one, but Wikipedia says that there was only a second film, but it was based on Silent Hill 3.
Oh, that must be what I'm thinking of then. Yep. Yeah, and they did the whole, they tried to do the whole thing, and yeah, it was, first of all, I didn't like it like, I didn't think it looked good enough for me to watch. I was just like, it does not look like they tried even a little bit. But then, you know, you go and look at some reviews, and, you know, you always take reviews with a grain of salt. But, I mean, 8% on Rotten Tomatoes, I think we know what we're talking about right now.
That, I was just pulling that up as you said it. Yeah, 8%. Now, how much did the first one get? The 2006 movie got 32%.
That's better. It's not as great, but it's better.
No, it's. I mean, better than 8% is a low standard.
Good. I give it a little bit of love from me.
From me. Yeah. Some people in this country are the 1%. You are the 8%.
Okay. That all being said, my next question to you is, I guess what, like, now that we've spoken about our favorites and the ones that we'll revisit and things like that, what do you think we should be looking for in adaptations? It seems like a lot of people want some kind of, like, one-to-one visual representation of the previous media, for which I would say just go consume that previous media. But, like, is that what we should be getting? Like, is that what we should strive for, is like the one-to-one of Resident Evil or the one-to-one of Borderlands? Like,
it's a really fine balancing act. I mean, I know you said that you'll watch Mario Brothers all day, any day, but I think we can collectively agree that it was not a commercial or critical success.
No, absolutely not.
And I think one of the reasons for that is because they hewed too closely to the source material. Like in the original game, they have, you know, they have mushrooms and they have bombs. And we're like, okay, we need to figure out a way to work these into the game or into the movie somehow. And they did. And it just, in some ways, it just didn't work. And so you need to be able to be willing to be creative and to adapt it to a new medium. But if you go too far, then what's the point of seeing a movie based on a game?
Right.
You know, like all the fans are going to be like, that's nothing like the game. They didn't, you know, he's not from that world and he doesn't do these things. And he doesn't have these powers. Like the original theatrical release of Superman 2, for example, was not great. And they gave Superman a lot of powers that he's never had in the comic book.
Sure.
And so when they did the Richard Donner cut a couple decades later, they brought it more closely back to the source material. So it was an original adventure, not based on the comics, inspired by the comics, certainly, with characters like General Zod, but you don't just go reinventing somebody as iconic as Superman.
Sure, that's fair.
Yeah, so, like, for example, they're doing a Gran Turismo game, or a movie, rather. You know, do the games have a plot? Not, I mean, I stopped playing after the PlayStation 1. I don't remember them having a plot.
Don't really remember a Gran Turismo plot. I think it just has quote-unquote career mode, and that's just you racing a whole lot.
Yeah, exactly. Career mode is not a campaign per se, so there really isn't much of a story. So they have a lot of flexibility there. There's a lot of things they can do with Gran Turismo. If it ends up being like Tom Cruise in Days of Thunder, you can't really complain because they didn't have much to work with to begin with.
Right.
Whereas the Horizon Zero Dawn, my friend Susan Arndt wrote this great Substack column about how they're going to have a really hard time adapting the world of Horizon Zero Dawn. One reason being, in the game, a lot of the lore and the culture comes across in side quests. Mm-hmm. And side quests do not necessarily make for gripping television.
Right, yeah.
Like you don't want to watch a TV show about fetch quests.
I mean, maybe.
Well, I'm sure that there's a niche audience out there for that thing. That's true. It might get canceled after the first season. But, yeah, it's... I've never made a movie. I wish I had some guidance that I could offer these folks, because I like a lot of these games and I want to see them done well, especially, for example, Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah.
Like, if you do a Metal Gear Solid movie and you don't have at least a cameo by David Hayter, then you're doing it wrong.
At least a cameo, like as a guard or something.
Yeah. What about you? Like, what are you looking for in these adaptations?
See, it's very strange to answer this question because I was like vehemently against the Resident Evil adaptations for a very long time. Specifically because of, like you said, they kind of reimagined the whole thing. They introduced a character who never existed in any game, Alice, and made her this kind of, I don't know, kind of like a Terminator type character instead of like a person living within the world that is a zombie apocalypse type situation. But as I like kind of re-examined the movies later on, I realized that like maybe I'm not exactly looking for the Resident Evil's one mansion experience, right? Maybe I'm not exactly looking for the characters to be running around and it is so bad today.
Close your window.
I have an air conditioner in there.
Ah, that'll do it.
It's the worst. Maybe I'm not exactly looking for the characters to kind of run around, open drawers, find puzzle pieces, and, you know, all that good stuff. But maybe I am looking for something kind of similar to it, where, you know, they're in the mansion, they're lost, there's monsters, and, like, they kind of open up a secret room and, you know, discover the world beyond the mansion and so on and so forth. How that's done, I have no idea, obviously. I am also not a movie maker, but I guess what I'm looking for is maybe not the one-to-one, but maybe like the one-to-three experience, right? Where it's still the iconic characters that I'm looking for, but not like the entire video game recreated as a movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a friend who believes that every comic book adaptation should adhere strictly to the original comic book, which sounds so incredibly boring and banal to me.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, why would you even bother seeing the movie if the script has been available for 50 years?
Right. Yeah, just read the book.
Right.
Yeah, it's a different medium, right? I guess it's just like making a game from a movie, right? You know, the Bourne Supremacy video game for the Xbox 360, not a great game, because how do you kind of change that medium into something way more interactive where you're actually playing as Jason Bourne? It comes out much differently. So yeah, you're not going to get a perfect one-to-one ever. But I guess expecting most of the iconic pieces to be there is the most that most of us can ask for and should expect.
Yeah, and that's actually a great example of Jason Bourne, because movies are a very linear medium. Everybody has the same experience watching a movie. I mean, they may internalize it differently, but the medium itself doesn't change.
Right.
Whereas with a game, especially nowadays, people are expecting to have more narrative choice when they make a game. They're not expecting to be railroaded. And so taking a movie and giving people a linear game experience is failing to take advantage of the medium. And conversely,
right,
when you take a video game that has narrative choice and you turn it into a movie, you are taking one specific interpretation of that game. Like Silent Hill has multiple endings based on who you save and which way you go. And so when you go see the movie, you might be like, that's not what I was expecting. That's not what my experience of the game was. And everybody who didn't get the ending that the movie had is going to be disappointed.
Right, right, right. Very true. Very, very true. So, as we've explored, there's no true right answer, my friends.
Except that I am looking forward to Space Channel 5.
I will watch that just to see what they do with it. Like, and Comic Zone, too. I mean, Comic Zone in itself is already a media mashup. Like, how are you going to expand that into a movie? It's very, very something.
Based on the description of the movie, I'm afraid it's going to end up being like Last Action Hero with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I might be into that. That might actually be okay. Maybe. We'll see.
Well, then, we have nothing to fear.
Once again, there is no right answer. Try to enjoy your adaptations, my friends. You know, they're still your favorite video games at the end of the day. You can always go back to the video game and say, this is way much better than whatever Neil Gaiman put out. So, you know, just relax. It's fine. We are at the end of the show, and as we move along toward the end of the show, we always ask that you give our listeners a recommendation. Which game or games should they be playing or be on the lookout for?
Oh, gosh. What should they be playing or be on the lookout for? Well, I do actually want to go back first and answer an earlier question about what game I've been playing. It took me 2 years, but I finished Ring Fit Adventure.
Oh, you did the whole thing.
I did. The game has an ending, and you can beat it. And so I am relieved to have done that. Have
an amazing core strength.
Well, if I had an amazing core strength, I would have finished it in 4 months.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah. But if you haven't played that game and you're looking for a way to exercise without leaving your house, that's a fun game. It's, you know, kind of old school by now. But let's see. Another game that I would recommend. I might need a minute. Can I ask you to recommend a game and come back to me?
Yes. So I would actually recommend Rumbleverse. I mentioned it earlier. It is part Fortnite as you know it, Battle Royale, part fighting game as you know it. You know, punch, take your turn, block, grapple, etc. And part wrestling. A lot of the moves are wrestling inspired. Choke slams and power bombs and all those cool wrestling moves that you love. So if any of those sound like your jam, if any two of those sound like your jam, I would say give Rumbleverse a try. They just started the season, so you can get the battle pass now, start getting some cool cosmetic stuff, and get to number one. Get your winner chicken dinner. I just got number one a couple nights ago. And it's just really nice. It's a fun game, fun battle royale. It's there's no ranged combat at all, so no guns or anything like that. It's all wrestling all the time.
Cool.
All melee.
Well, a game that I will recommend, which possibly many of your listeners have played by this point, is Spiritfarer.
Mm.
So it's essentially a resource management game where you have a boat. And you have on the boat, like, a refinery, a kitchen, a garden, and you have to constantly be going to different islands and collecting resources to feed into these parts of your ship to get out other materials that you can then combine, etc. The two things I really liked about the game, though, what I just described does not appeal to me. What did appeal to me was, A, the story. It's set in the afterlife, and you are going around to different islands collecting people who have passed away and are sort of in limbo waiting for the next stage of the afterlife.
Yep.
And you need to help them come to terms with the life that they have left behind and perhaps find closure with it. The story is subtle in many ways, but elegant.
Mm-hmm.
And I was literally in tears at the end of it, which was like 40 hours later. The other thing I liked about the game, which I think a lot of people overlook, is that it's a two-player game.
Mm.
So there are two characters that you can play as. One is the person running the ship, the captain, and the other is her cat. And when you're playing one-player mode, the cat just follows you around. But in two-player mode, the second player controls the cat, and the cat can do everything the human can do except talk to other people. So, like, the cat can shear the sheep, it can cook bread in the kitchen, it can pick apples from the apple orchard, everything. It's not split screen, so sometimes it's the platforming sections are a little challenging if one person jumps and the other person falls. But it's very easy to just switch to one-player mode for those scenes, get past the platforming, then switch back to two-player. I played the entire game two-player with a friend who, like me, is a digital nomad, so our paths don't always cross. So we would play together for like 2 weeks because it's local only, not online.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd play together for 2 weeks, and then we'd have to set it aside for like 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then reconvene and try to remember what we'd been doing and pick it up. And the world gets bigger and bigger as you play, to the point where you open up the game one day and you're like, there are so many things I want to do. There's so many directions I want to sail. And you just have to pick one. And everything that you don't pick will be there waiting for you. And so some people might find that overwhelming, but I found it very liberating that you had that much choice, even though ultimately you all kind of end up in the same place.
Very good.
Yeah.
Very good. I've always heard like really, really nice things about Spiritfarer. Some people get very emotional playing it, I've heard. A friend of mine who really loved it said that she like cried at certain parts of it. So, you know, steel yourself a little bit, but do give it a try. Finally, to finish off this show, please let us know where we can find you on the internet and if you have anything else to plug.
Oh, sure. Thank you. I am most active on Twitter, and my Twitter handle is GameBits, GameBits. I've never actually worked full time in the game industry, but I've always been producing content in it. And before I was podcasting, before I was YouTubing, I was a freelance writer in the games industry. Back in 1997, I started with a newspaper column, and the editor said at the last minute, "Hey, we need a name for your column." And I tried to think of it as trying to come up with something clever. And finally I realized, well, you know, this is my first professional writing opportunity. You're taking a chance on me by giving me this opportunity. And another name for a chance is a gambit. So let's call my column Gambits.
That's beautiful.
And so I've been using that name now for, this is the 25th year I've had that name. I've owned the website gamebits.net for probably since like 99. So wow. It's my oldest email address. But anyway, yeah, Twitter, Gambits. If you really like old Apple computers, and you can check out my magazine called Juiced GS. Very brief story about that. I am not the founding editor of Juiced, which we call it for short. I'm the third editor. I've been doing it for the last 16 years. And I've been doing it for so long, and I enjoy it so much that I got a custom license plate. Juiced, J-U-I-C-E-D. Well, it wasn't until after I'd been doing the magazine for 10 years and after I'd already had the license plate for a year that I found out that juiced means being on steroids.
Ah.
Like, I never figured that out, and they let me get that license plate?
No one told you.
Like, I should be getting pulled over every 5 minutes with that plate.
Yeah, yeah. Or at least someone should be like, "Hey, where do you get some?"
Right. And do you want to join my baseball team?
Yeah.
The website for Juiced GS is juiced.gs. That is an actual website address as well. So yeah, those are the two places to find me. And I'm sure I could think of other things to plug. I mentioned earlier, Take This. If you are going to conventions, which I know is less common in a pandemic, then you probably want to be aware of the resources they offer. So takethis.org, of course, named after the opening phrase of the original Legend of Zelda. I'm not affiliated with them, just a big fan of the work they do.
Very good. Very, very good. All right. As always, you can find me at KamiJace Gaming on Twitter. You can find the Weekly Cooldown as well on Twitter at WK Cooldown. Be sure to visit the Weekly Cooldown Facebook page. Visit WKCooldown.com for more news and other episodes. Be sure to leave a review or comment on Apple Podcasts. And be sure to check out the links in the description, including, of course, our Humble Bundle for this week. And remember, you can support your favorite charities and support this show. Our logo and art is done by Corgian. Follow Doghouse Corgian on Twitter, DoghouseCorgian, Doghouse Corgian on Twitter. Our intro music is done by Riki. Follow Riki on Twitter at dog_noise, DoghNoise. That's all for the Weekly Cooldown. I'm Kami Jace.
I'm Ken.
And we'll see you next week. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.